I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/Inner Academy.
This is Chris Grasso with the Indie Spirituals Podcast on the Be Here Now Network. My guest today is Ambika. Ambika, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. So as always in my show, I like to read my guest bios really quick, just for anyone who's not familiar with you or your work. And then we're going to have a lovely, fun, engaging chat about all things Kirtan and Neem Karoli Baba and who else knows what's going to come up. But before we get to all that, Ambika has been a singer and musician for most of her life, playing in various bands in New York City until she discovered chanting with Krishna Dass in 1995. Kirtan had a profound effect on her and led her to India, where she met her teacher and spiritual mother, Sri Siddhi Ma. As Ambika deepened her connection to the practice of chanting, it became her home and refuge. Recently, she has been exploring chants from other faith traditions, working with a program at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. In February of 2015, Ambika released a digital single, Meta Chant, produced and recorded by Devadas Labrek. Yeah. I'm totally butchering this intro, but the thing is, whatever comes up comes out. I don't edit it. So this
it's
is real
totally
life.
Totally fine.
So her first full-length album, Mother's Calling, produced by our dear mutual friend Lily Cushman, is now available on Mantrology, who another dear friend, Kylie Lalita, absolutely love her. And so, yeah, she's such a sweetie.
Oh my God.
So for more, please visit www. I'll spell this for listeners. A, M like Mary, B like boy, I, K, A, C like Charles, H, A, N like Nancy, T like Thomas.com. Or if you're checking this out on the Be Here Now Network, please just scroll down a little bit and you will see the website linked. It's just a click away. And all of that said, Ambika, thank you. Or Ambika. So
you did it. No, that's perfect.
Was it good? For listeners, I've been talking to Ambika for like 5 minutes before the recording. Wait, how do I pronounce your name? So I'm doing my best. Thank you for bearing with me. I appreciate it.
You're doing great.
Well, thank you. So I'm really jazzed to have you on the show. As we were discussing before, I'm, of course, familiar with your name. We've never talked before. We somewhat connected several years ago as you were working with Sharon Salzberg and you were helping me coordinate an interview with her for my website. I could just tell even through email, you're always very lovely and cordial. And here we are kind of crossing paths again several years later. You have this absolutely beautiful, beautiful Kirtan album out. This conversation, it can go in a number of different directions. I'm excited to see where it goes. So maybe all of that said, before we jump into the album, I guess since we've talked a little about Sharon, do you want to maybe take me back, even pre-Sharon, and tell me a little bit about what actually in the first place guided your path onto that of spirituality? What was it that, you know, sparked your interest? And then maybe talk or walk me and the audience through a little bit of that, and then into working with Sharon, and then moving on from there into what you're doing today.
Alrighty.
I know it's a lot of ground to cover, so I'll jump in at some point. But yeah, just
stop me. Wait. Yeah, it's like 40 minutes later, 4 hours later, and then
I love it. You'll make my job and podcast very easy. So no. Yeah. So whatever comes up for you out of that very vague question.
No, it's great. And I actually always love to hear people's stories. And I always ask, you know, how did you, you know, when I'm at the ashram in India, like, how did you end up here? Like, your story? So I love people's stories. So I'm happy to tell mine.
Excellent. Thank you.
Because it helps us all connect to each other. So I want to say I was always a seeker, like even as a child, like I had this kind of longing, but my family wasn't religious in any way. And so I didn't really have a place to, I didn't have a container for that longing that I understood. And, you know, I hit on it momentarily in places. Like I read Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, like before it was a Broadway show and whatever it became, it was a book and I fell in love with it. And I felt that like stirring of like, I want this so badly. And I tried to go to Sunday school, actually. I did go to Sunday school, like Hebrew school, you know, because my dad's Jewish, and for like twice. And I was like, this is nothing like that book. This is terrible. This is boring and horrible. And so, I mean, you know, I'm sure other Sunday schools are great, but that one, it just didn't match up.
Sure.
And then I like to say my first kirtan experience was I was in gospel chorus when I was a teenager. I went to music and art high school here in New York City, and they had this amazing gospel chorus that was completely run by the students. It had a student director, student composers, and it was pretty much all African American and Baptist, like devout Baptist people. So I was a like white Jewish punk rock kid. I didn't belong in that chorus in any kind of way, except that I wanted to be there, and it was a public school and it was an elective and they couldn't say no, you know?
Right.
So, it was one of the most profound experiences I've ever had singing in that devotional way with those really devoted young people. It was just unbelievable, the energy. But at that time, you know, I couldn't really make the leap to like believe. It was too big of a leap for me to like think I could be Christian and Baptist and believe in Jesus. Like, I just didn't have that capacity at that time to make a leap, even though I felt the spirit when I was with them. Right.
Yeah. So here, this is me jumping in as promised.
Good.
Because I definitely want to continue on, but I would of course be quite remiss, as you know, my inner bells and radar went off when I hear punk rock. Because of course, you know, I am very punk rock, and we already mentioned Kylie. For those who don't know, Kylie Lolita and her husband, Steve Reddy, who own Montrology. It's funny. Kate's a dear friend today. But I remember seeing her back in the early 90s, doing Project Kate, her solo acoustic stuff. And so they ran this really incredible record label, Equal Vision Records, put out a lot of my favorite punk and hardcore bands. So you mentioned punk. Is that part of, were you into stuff like that, or what was your punk rock surroundings? What did that look like? What bands were you into in that part of your life?
Yeah, so mine was a little different. I wasn't as much into hardcore, and I did a little dabble in it, but mostly it was like the early punk, like the Sex Pistols and Susie and the Banshees and Nina Hagen, who, by the way, put out like an amazing kirtan album. And if you haven't heard it, you should go find it and listen to it.
So I'm jotting it down.
It's so good because I loved her.
Awesome.
Saw her all the time. I saw like the Cramps. I saw the Buzzcocks. I saw the Undertones. I saw, I loved all these bands. Stiff Little Fingers was one of my favorites.
Very cool.
So that was, it was more that, it's a little, right? So I did see the Bad Brains were like the hardcore band around town.
Yep.
that I used to go see. And I saw the Dead Kennedys. They came around, and right. I loved the Clash. I used to see the Clash a lot.
Awesome.
So a little more classic punk rock, and I dabbled in hardcore, I want to say, but not as much.
All right. Well, thank you for help. I always love going down memory lane with that stuff. So I don't often get to talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
So
right.
Thank you for entertaining me there. But okay, so back to where you were.
But that was also like. You know, as a person who the music the way it was when I grew up, like music was kind of my religion, right?
Oh, yeah.
So at that time, like the bands I saw, it was like I was fervently devoted to them, you know. So again, there was something there, you know. But it just at a certain time, I had a lot. So I was a singer, and I had this band and that band, and I loved it, but. I think it was in the 90s, and I had a band, and I wasn't, something had shifted for me, and I started to go to Jivamukti for yoga, to take yoga. And I came to yoga, like many do, because of, an ailment, right? Because I had, you know, asthma, and I was trying to, like, people said, you know, that's what you should do.
Right.
And it was, you know, this was the 90s, so it wasn't nearly, there weren't as many places, but Jivamukti was around, and they were in the East Village, and they were like the hipster, pre-hipster place to go. It was like where all the rock and roll folks went, and the edgy artists went. And I fit right in there and felt really at home there. But the thing about them was that they very much, you know, prior to that, yoga was kind of taught mostly as like a stretching exercise here. There wasn't a whole lot, or you were like had to join like an ashram, you know, there wasn't a lot of in between. And so they were really great about bridging that. And they really brought the spiritual teachings in a way that really resonated with me. So, and then Krishnadas was just starting to chant out with people at that time. And he was there every Monday night, and it was just like a few people. And when I heard him chant, like they chanted in the classes there, and they had Sanskrit classes. And I took Sanskrit with my teacher, Manorama. Who is actually on the album singing with me this one prayer that she taught me, which is really fabulous. And I love the chanting. I really resonated with it. But when he sang, it was just like when he chanted, it was something other. It was like that feeling I felt in gospel chorus. Like it was that same. I felt like I'd come home, and I couldn't, you know, as many people do when they start chanting, you know, you just cry. You don't know why you're crying. You don't know what you're doing here. You don't know what you're singing. There were no chant sheets then. Like, you know, you're just like mumbling through it, but like you're doing your best, but there's something so resonant in the practice, and it really struck such a deep chord that and the yoga really started to shift things for me. And I really started to seek more actively, and I went to ashrams, and I met other gurus, and I met Sharon early on, Sharon Salzberg, because she's a good friend of Krishnadas's, and he brought her to Jivamukti, and I remember that, to teach, and she did some metta practice with us.
Yeah.
And then once I became friends with him, and he said, you know, you should really go, he told Nina and I, we should go do a loving kindness retreat at IMS. The Insight Meditation Society. And it wasn't Sharon's retreat. I think either the timing or hers was sold out or whatever it was.
Yeah.
We went to someone else's. We just went for whatever metta retreat was happening at that moment. And Nina and I were friends, but we really became close on that retreat, because as you know, with those kind of retreats, it's silent, but it's so profound. And
And for the audience, we're talking about Nina Rao, correct?
Nina Rao, yes.
Yes,
sorry,
perfect. Just for clarity. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Who's another absolutely lovely kirtan musician and plays with Katie all the time. Thank you.
So we went on that retreat, and that practice really shifted me. I mean, it is a really heart opening practice. And then not long after that, from that experience, we became very close, and it was even actually on the bus home. We took the bus up there from New York, and on the bus back, we were like, let's go to India. Now she's Indian. But we were like, let's go to Kenchi, to the temple, to Neem Karoli Baba's ashram. And, and I had a whole trip. I had a whole trip planned. I went for 6 months. I had a whole, you know, trip planned. And before that, I had because of all the chanting and practice I was doing and exploration, I was just like, my life was shifting in such a way that I was sort of falling apart a little, like in a good way, but my functionality was way down. I was having dreams with saints in them, and I didn't know what was happening. And I actually called Krishnadas and I was like, can we talk? Can we meet and talk? Like, I don't know what's going on, but I think maybe you do. Yeah. And he was like, sure. And so we met in this Starbucks. He used to have a place in the city, a little apartment on the east side, upper east side. And we met in a Starbucks near him. And the moment I opened my mouth, I just started bawling, you know, and he was like, okay, maybe we go somewhere like quiet and not public. It was really, right. He was so sweet. Cause I was just a basket case. You know? And then we went to his place and we sat like in front of, he has this puja, like this beautiful puja. And, you know, we just sat quietly for the longest time. And then I don't even remember what he said, honestly, except that he showed me a picture of Siddhima. And he said, if you ever want to meet a real saint, you should go see her. And that that really also struck me quite deeply, even though at that moment I was just like, okay. But it stayed with me. And so I wanted to go to Kenchi and go to Neem Karoli Baba's ashram. I wanted to meet her. But I had a lot of other plans on that trip. I was able to go for 6 months, which was like a huge boon, I want to say. And I had been chanting with Krishnadas and chanting on my own at that point a bit, leading chanting at Jivamukti and a couple other places. But I went to India, and when I met Siddhima, and when I walked into the ashram, it just felt, that was like home times thousands, you know. And meeting her was like, I'd met other saints and had like really beautiful experiences, but that was just something other, you know. It's like,
yeah,
the deepest kind of falling in love that I've ever experienced, and the most lasting.
That's absolutely beautiful. Wow. So so you meet Siddhima. Can you talk a little more about that experience? I mean, I know, how do you really put that into words? Cause it's kind of that indescribable sensation and experience. But maybe if you can talk a little bit about, so you meet this incredible person, how does your life change? Where do you go from there? What, you know, how do things kind of unfold from that point for you?
So you know, I didn't really ever, once I met her, I just wanted, like, everything else went out the window. Like, right. I just didn't care about anything else other than being near her. And she gave Nina and I the seva, which means service, right?
Yes.
Of, like, we used to sit with the kirtanwalas there. So they have these guys who sing just the Maha Mantra, just Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, all day from 5 a.m. till 10 p.m.
Wow, yeah.
And Krishnadas has talked a lot about them and sitting with them. And so you go, they in this little temple, there's just three guys and they rotate, you know, they have like a crew that rotates. So it's not just three guys for all that whole time.
Yeah, right.
So they get to like eat and do things, take breaks.
Right.
So they have like 3 hour shifts. So, we just wanted to sit with them the entire day. And so, Siddhima just said, you know, and there were people at the ashram, because this is always the way it is. There's always going to be people in any organization that tell you what to do or that why you're doing something wrong. Like, that's just right. You go anywhere and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So there were other people like, we should be doing this or that, or why are we in here all day, or I don't know. But she said, you know, no, you love it. This is your seva. You should sit with them as much as possible. So that was pretty great. And meeting her, so we did that, and we're chanting as much as we could. And meeting her, I mean, it's just hard. It is hard to describe in words, because she's a person in a body, or she left her body last year. But she was, you know, this older woman, but her presence was just so vast and so loving and generous, and she really she was very practical. I love that about her. You know, she would just talk to you about practical things sometimes, you know, and it wasn't all like always, you know, it was really interesting mix of like being very motherly and practical and nurturing and and then talking about the teachings and about Maharaji. And for her, everything was, she didn't want pictures of herself. She didn't want anybody taking pictures of her or talking about her as their guru. It was always Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji. Like, everything for her was him. And she took care of all his ashrams. Yeah. And, you know, that was kind of interesting, too, because it meant, like, pictures, like, were, like, kind of contraband. They were, like, secret, and you, like, people would, like, pass them around of her, and you're really lucky if you could get a picture. And then there was always a play of, like, trying to take her picture, and if she would say yes to you or no, or, like, there's, like, or if snuck it, or, like, there was just, like with Maharaji, there's just, like, a lot of play like that. That was really fun.
Yeah. We're talking a lot about KDE and bhakti and kirtan and chanting. So let's say someone's listening and they're really actually not familiar with kirtan or chanting. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what chanting is? And I'll preface that by saying this, and just to share very briefly an experience I had, because we were talking earlier about punk rock. And so for me, I was like 13 or 14. And I will never forget the first time a friend put on a 7-inch and the feeling that came through me, really raw, like passion. It just, it cut through like the core of my being, and I fell in love instantaneously. And I share that because I did not have that experience again until well over 10 years after the first time. And I don't remember which album specifically it was, but I had taken out a Krishna Das record out of my local library or a CD. I don't remember which one, but what I do remember is hitting play and instantaneously, and it was my first time actually hearing kirtan music. I had the same exact experience with that as I did the first time with punk rock, and, you know, two completely ends of the musical spectrum, but it cut right to the core of my being, and absolutely, I welled up, tears came out. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what, you know, he was singing. I didn't know what, you know, I didn't know anything except it was completely real. So all that said, yes, can you talk a bit about what chanting is and kirtan and bhakti for those who aren't actually familiar with the practice and the music itself?
Yeah. You know, the traditional, like, I'll go from the traditional and then I'll go to, like, how I experience it, too, which awesome. Is, I love the way you talked about the way you experience it, because I really, that resonates with me. So traditionally, it's the repetition of the name, and this is the divine name, and these names are thousands of years old. So they're the names of gods and goddesses in India, you know, like Ram, Krishna, Sita, Radha, you know, Durga, you can chant to the different deities, but they are said to have a power unto themselves, like the actual vibration of these names. And so I like to say always, like you, like, it's been my direct experience that that's true.
Yeah.
But I don't, I don't go out preaching that. I'm just, you know, in that Buddhist way of, like, check it out for yourself, because the Buddha said that exactly.
Yeah, seriously, yeah.
Totally said that.
Yep.
but that's the basic gist, right?
Right, totally.
Don't believe me. Check it out for yourself. So, my direct experience has been that that's true, that I find the vibration, the power in the chanting of the name, that repetition, to really go quite deep and take me to a very different place than I was when I began. Yeah. And I want to say all music that's authentic or that you authentically connect with has that power to a certain extent, right? Like, it really will take you to a different place. Great music does that. Yes. That's why we love listening to it. But there's another element here that's more so. So not more direct, but just a different level. So, because this is a spiritual practice. And so music often, these days, especially for us in the West, is a performance, right? We go and somebody's performing, and it can be quite deep and beautiful, but there's still this element of separation. The chanting is like a practice that we all do together. So it's a spiritual practice. We all sing this together. So it's like gospel or singing in your church. If anybody who sang in a church, or there's a tradition, the Judaism has a tradition of singing. Like most religions have a tradition of this kind of spiritual gathering together and raising your voices. And I think that that's part of the power of it, because it's meant, it's a call and response, the kirtan tradition, right? So the leader calls out and then everybody else responds. And there's just, I have to say, like, I have, since I started singing kirtan, I've done a little other kind of singing, which I hadn't done in years. I used to be in bands and performing all the time. But when I do other kinds of singing now, I really miss the response. Like, it feels not quite right to me because it's the response that I love the most. That's just, there's nothing like it. It's that call and response is really quite rich and deep and brings everybody together and connects us all. So that's part of the tradition of kirtan. And bhakti is the path of devotion in the Hindu tradition.
Right.
And so that's that. It's like the experience I had when I met Siddhima. It's like you fall in love. It's quite passionate. You know, it's really lovely because it's this way of worshiping God and the divine that's very romantic, you know. So there's like the, you know, the stories of Krishna and the gopis. Kaylee tells them the best, I have to say.
Yeah.
Of anybody talking, if you want to hear like bhakti told well, ask Kaylee.
Yeah.
You should have her on the show and make her tell stories.
I have had her on.
Talk about, good.
Oh, yeah.
Cause she's like, she's my favorite. Talking about bhakti.
And, have you heard, not to cut you off, but also Raghunath, who Ray Capo.
Oh, yeah.
He, I don't know if you've had the opportunity to see him, but he is a great sharer of these stories as well. Very entertaining.
Yeah, I know of him. I haven't actually sat with him, though, and heard his stories. So that's
cool. Well, if you ever get the chance.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. So carry on, please.
Yeah. So, but. You know, so that's the basic gist, is that bhakti is really like this, it's a spiritual practice of devoting yourself to the deities or to, I mean, in the bhakti tradition, you really are sort of devoting yourself to the actual deities. But, and for me with Siddhima, that came kind of naturally, like I just fell in love with her. So there was no feeling of like, how do I devote myself? Like I just fell into it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be with her and be around her and do whatever I could for her. But mostly it was, it was pretty selfish too, I want to say, with Siddhima. I always just wanted to be near her.
Yeah.
It was like, just like a moment.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. Like you do with like someone you're in love with that.
I mean, you hear that story time and again with Maharaja, you know, like especially Ram Dass talks about it all the time. And many people who had the privilege of getting to know him. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and KK, one of his great devotees, you know, KK Shah, right?
Yeah.
So he's I'm friends with KK, and KK, when I love him so much. And he would say when I was like, yeah, I'm just selfish. I just wanted, and he's like, no, that's not that. Or he was like, that's the good kind of selfish. That's the kind of selfish you should be. Like,
oh,
he was always like, that's the right way. And it's not really selfish. And it's true. It's a funny thing. Cause it feels a little like that selfishness, but there is this bigger other level to it because you're really aspiring to something greater, right?
Yeah.
You're really trying to sort of connect with that whole, with the divine, with the absolute, with the power of love.
Yeah. And you know, I'm glad you say that because I experienced this, and a lot of people I've talked to throughout the years have also shared in regards to meditation, how they almost feel like that's selfish. Like, you mean I'm going to take time for myself, 5, 10, 20 minutes and sit there when I could be doing something in the world? But you just nailed it. Like, yes, you are, but it's a good selfish. Like, you're connecting with your truer self, your higher self, your deeper being, let alone like the physical benefits, which are great in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes you a healthier person in the world. But yeah, connecting with that deeper source within you, I wish everybody took even just 5 minutes a day to do that. You know, what a difference that would really make in this world. But yeah, it's a really good thing. So I'm glad you brought that up.
It's funny because actually Siddhima, I remember her saying this to my ex-husband. We were together and I can't remember what he said to her, but she was like, her response was, you know, you people, like, you all spend so much, you waste your time, like, going around and doing this and that, and you don't even take 5 minutes to do what's real.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that. She was like, to do what's real. Because we often think of spiritual practice as not real and the world is real, but she totally flipped that. And I think she's right.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have to say, the more I do practice, the better my life becomes. It changes my perspective. It shifts everything. You know, I was so, you know, like you, I don't know what would have become of me if I hadn't found this path. Like, my life would have been sad and empty. And I feel so grateful to have this, because, you know, things go wrong, as we know, right? A lot of stuff happens in life. There's a lot of pain and suffering in life, right?
Absolutely.
But this is like the anchor. This is like it's my refuge. This is the refuge. And without it, I don't know how I would navigate this world.
You know, absolutely. And as you're saying that, it reminds me of I was on Katie's Pilgrim Heart podcast a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I forgot how this came up, but, you know, he just made this really, really wonderful point about how. Oh, I think I was talking to him, you know, because he had had his own experience with drug abuse, you know, many, many years ago.
Yep.
And, you know, he doesn't shy away from that at all. And I was asking him, you know, why do you think people turn to drugs? And even when they know better, and, you know, he talked about how, well, look at this, you know, we're in this rock hurtling through space, you know, it's like, it's so hard to find any source of grounding. And then, you know, there are the rare few of us that are blessed to have some sort of spiritual context, spiritual connection, spiritual practice that doesn't, you know, magically fix everything, but at least helps give us some semblance of grounding. And of course, you know, that's not verbatim, but, you know, he's saying something to that effect. Like, how lucky we are to have that in our lives. Because there are so many people that just go through life on autopilot that will never have any experience of that or any connection. And, you know, some people, I guess, I was going to say maybe don't need it. I don't know that that's the right wording, but, you know, maybe they're just not called to it and they do fine with whatever else works for them. And that's great. You know, whatever works for you, as long as you're not hurting someone else, God bless. But I'm grateful for me, you know, and my connection with that for sure. But so, you know, I definitely want to talk to you about, and I think we've had a wonderful conversation leading up to this, but your album, Mother's Calling, which, as mentioned, Mantrology, an absolutely wonderful label, has put out. It was produced by Lily Cushman, again, a dear friend, and member of the Satsang. So can you tell me a bit about this record, you know, the process and inspiration for it, the recording, working with Lily, you know, just anything you'd love to share about this record.
Sure. I mean, I should say that, you know, so I started to record, I had been meaning to record an album for years. I like started like 12, 13 years ago recording with John McDowell. And then, but I was pregnant with my son, my second child. And I was just deluded thinking that I could continue it, you know, after I had him. And then life happened and all kinds of, I was flailing around. And then also I realized, you know, I had a lot of resistance to putting my work out there because I'd been a performer for so long and been in bands. And just because of my particular personality and karma, I had a lot of resistance to putting it to sort of releasing the music and not having it be kind of a private thing. Right.
Yeah.
It messed with my head a little, because that, you know, for so many years I really wanted name and fame and I've struggled with that. Like there's a part of me that wants it. And there's a part of me that wants to be a sadhu and a hermit and go be in a cave, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So it's been an interesting push pull. So it really took a lot. And when I was finally ready again, I asked Lily, and I'm so glad I did, because Lily, I mean, she's an amazing producer. I had listened to her. She has an album. Do you know this? She has an album, a solo album she did. Have you Have you ever listened? Has she let you listen to it?
I don't know. No, I know of it, but I've not heard it. I've heard
really
her kirtan, but I will
right.
now
you
that I know.
You should harass her to like, this is my thing. I'm like, everybody ask to listen to that. It's really good.
Oh, believe
me. It's beautiful.
Me. Yes, it's now on my to-do list once we finish this conversation.
So I listened to that. She sent that to me, like, you know, when we were becoming friends, she was like, hey, and she had this band. And I was like, oh, and it was all, she'd self-produced, right? So I was like, okay. And then I already knew I wanted it to be all women singing responses. And that was because, and the title was already with me. And the title was Mother's Calling refers to when you're in the temple in the days with Siddhi Ma, when she was in the body, when you were being called to go see her, they would come to you and say, Mother's Calling. Right.
Yeah.
And it was like the thing you wanted to hear. If you were me, it was like there couldn't be a better phrase.
Yeah.
I still would run and jump. I would go anywhere if somebody said that to me. Mm. Like right now.
So now I know if I ever meet you.
Leave my children in the lurch. That would be it. Whatever.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I wanted it to be women. I'd had that idea early on. It came to me because and KD has talked a lot about this, about singing with the Ma's, they call it the older women devotees,
yes.
or just women devotees, really, in mothers. In India, this term, you know, you say Ma, right? And that satsang of singing with the women that I would do in India really was very special and potent for me. Mm. And so I wanted to sort of recreate that on the album a little bit, like that particular satsang, of singing with women. And Lily really loved the idea. And so, and then she and I had a lot of obstacles come up in our lives during, you know, we started 5 years ago or so when I asked her, and then, you know, both our marriages, ended during the time when we were recording the albums and our friendship became very deep during that time. We became so close and each other's supports through the really hard times.
Yeah.
So it was a really interesting thing that this album is also like a bit the story of our friendship, you know?
Yeah.
As it is like an offering for me, it's an offering to Siddhi Ma. It was always meant to be that because she always asked me to sing for her, you know, from early on. To those early days with Nina, to the like that 6 months I was in India, she would ask me to sing. Like she gave me a schedule, you know, you have to like, but when it was other temples where there weren't kirtan walas, it was my job to like sing in front of Maharaji's Murti, right?
Yeah.
In front of his so it felt really important to me to like, you know, when she gave me the name, because she gave me the name that first trip, and when she gave it to me, she said, this is a name. This is not a name for wasting time and going here and there and doing this and that. This is a name for singing to God.
Mm. That's
and
beautiful.
So, yeah, so I tried to like, I really try to live that as much as I can. Like, so it did feel important to release a, like an album and to because it's what it's doing is I'm singing more, right? So I'm like, I'm going out more and I'm singing more with people now that the album's out, which is really good for me. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was sort of like, that's all the sort of that, the spirit of the album is there. And then with Lily, the recording, you know, the friendship, the recording process, we work with Kevin Riley. So, he's so great, Kevin. He does sound for KD and, he was really great. He has a studio up in, Nyack, and we would go up there a lot and do a lot of stuff with him, and he's amazing and has great equipment, and we just had like a lot of fun. The three of us got really stupid and silly together. There were a lot of long hours of a lot of like, I have so many ridiculous videos and pictures. It's great.
Oh yeah, I know how it goes.
Like, I'm sure you do. So yeah. So even though it took a while, it was a pretty great process. And then Lily really had, because she thinks like a producer, she really had she came up with things that I just never would have thought of. Like she thought of like sort of the spoken word, sort of being sampled in across the album, which I really loved.
Yeah.
And you know, I knew I wanted to do samples because after hearing her album, and also I had that idea that I wanted to have samples from India, in it anyway. I'd heard one of Shamdas's recordings that I really loved that John McDowell produced, had a lot of beautiful samples from India that I loved. And so I kind of wanted to bring that into the album. And so it just happened that I could, I ended up going to India right before we finished the album, finished mixing it. We'd done with recording, and we used almost all of those recordings, which I got around the ashram and had some of the women, you know, devotees singing. That last piece is just them singing a prayer. And that was really felt like a blessing. Yeah. So she really had an idea of how to weave that all in a lot, you know, and she had the idea to like, she was like, we just need ambient sounds. Cause I was thinking like all temple chanting, you know,
right.
She was like, no, we need some street sounds and just walk around with the recorder. And so that, those were things I wouldn't have thought of, like, and breaking up the tracks the way she did, I wouldn't have thought of that. Again, she just has like a really great way of hearing and feeling the music, that, I the album wouldn't be what it is without that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always love working with a good producer, and I found, you know, I'm a musician myself first and foremost, but it was really cool to see how once I started writing books, working with editors at the publishing houses, it was like the same thing as a producer, you know, just they're helping me craft chapters rather than songs.
Right.
So I'm glad that I had that background and context to bring to the publishing experience. So,
it's a great translation, actually.
It was really surreal. And then it's kind of funny that, you know, I spent my teenage and early adult years touring in bands and in indie rock bands. And now I'm back like touring for books. But the only difference is it gets a little lonely when it's just you. You know, you don't have you don't have your bandmates.
Right.
So on the one hand, there's no bickering, which is nice.
Right.
But you also don't have but you don't have those silly, stupid things like you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I can videotape myself looking like an idiot on an airplane, but it's like, where's my buddies? Like also being idiots. So. But yeah, it is. I found it's really interesting, the intersections between the two. So I feel like my musical experience really primed me to be ready to do the book thing. And and I'm very lucky where I still get to, depending on where I am, bring my guitar and do music meditations. Or I've done a two-piece kirtan with my friend Alana Kaivalya, who I don't know if you've ever met her, but she lives in Queens. And she's a lovely author with... New World Library, and she teaches worldwide, and so we've played at Kripalu, and but we do fun stuff too. She'll play the harmonium, sings beautifully, but we will combine you know, the classic chants with like a U2 song, or we've taken like Don't You Forget About Me and put the Sri Ram Jai Ram chant in there. And so, you know, we're trying to do something.
Oh my God. Well, you
done.
Know that they do that in India, right? Do you know that?
No. Like
okay. So you're in a really good tradition because, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just got too excited.
Please. This is great. I didn't know it. We thought we were all original. So please tell me.
Well, in India, I want to say, they'll sing, right?
Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. But the melodies, like mostly they're traditional melodies they're singing.
Yeah.
But there was one melody that I loved, that I fell in love with. And then I was like at a chai stand and I hear that melody, and lo and behold, it's a Bollywood song.
No kidding.
It's like from a Bollywood movie. And then like my friend was like, maybe it was Nina. I can't remember who I was with. She was like, oh yeah, they all do that.
Wow.
Like that's a thing. Like they'll take the pop songs and just put, so you like what you did.
Wow.
I'm not going
to have to tell Lana
that
about
that.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my.
So, it's a great thing to do. It's like a good tradition.
Well, so it's kind of speaking about popular music outside of just strictly kirtan, who would you say some of your other influences are musically? I mean, I know we talked about back in the day, and that's a big question. But are there like a handful that come to mind that even today you enjoy that are, and maybe even they didn't directly influence you, but you just find inspiration from or connect to on that heart level? Because I mean, I still listen to punk rock and hardcore and metal and indie hip hop, and those are still very spiritual to me because I feel that heart connection with them. And to me, that is the definition of spirituality. Just like I feel that connection with Kirtan as well. But yeah, are there any, you know, more contemporary or even old school, just anybody that really inspires you and you love?
I have many. I have a long list, but I'll try to shorten it a little bit. The first one is Prince. Prince has been one of my favorite artists since I was in high school. And he first hit that when I first discovered him, and he still is I still listen to Prince. I will always listen to Prince. So he's a major influence. I just feel that strong, strong connection with him. Bowie is another one. I just saw the Bowie exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum. It's amazing. It's about to end.
I'm so jealous.
It's so good. You should run over there.
I know. I feel like I'm going to have to now.
Yeah, you're going to have to. But Bowie's another strong influence in my life. Billie Holiday was a big influence. I love her still. Nina Simone, another great artist that I love and influenced me. And the ones I mentioned. And then, you know, wow, there are so many.
I know, it's a big question.
You know, it's Joni Mitchell. Like, I fly all over the place. And then I also had a time where I had a foray into like the world of like avant-garde sort of microtonal music. I had a boyfriend for a while that we had a band together. His name is John Cattler, and he played with Lamont Young and did like all this microtonal music in a different tuning system, just intonation. And so that was a whole world that he really influenced me, and that whole world did. And in fact, I ended up taking lessons with the pundit Pranath, because he's Lamont Young's teacher, and so that was like early on Indian singing lessons with him. These days I actually listen to it partly because I have young, you know, I have a teenager and now an almost tweenager. I listen to a lot of contemporary music, but one of my favorites of late is Frank Ocean. I think he's nice. I just think he's beautiful. And I like to listen to contemporary, like I like to listen to pop music. Like I go all over the place. I used to be a snob, right? Back in the punk days, like you couldn't listen to, there was that, like you could, you know, I had loved disco a lot before I got into punk. And then it was like, you had to renounce that, but I still love disco. Like I was really grateful when it all, like, I didn't have to, I could like tell the truth again about loving disco.
I will still rock Earth, Wind and Fire any day of the week, any day. I have no shame in admitting that. I hear you.
I mean, I love disco. Yeah. It was one of my earliest, like, I love it. Yeah. It's a little bit.
Well, I two thumbs up, big thumbs up to every single act you just named. I mean, they are all definitely in my iPod, and I adore all of them. That's the thing. Music, you know, I'm very diverse, and I'm just so grateful, you know, for all the different styles of music. And of course, I think being a musician also helps in that regard. And that's why I love playing drums and guitar and bass. And, you know, just I find playing one instrument helps me in another. And music is such a spiritual, cathartic, wonderful experience. So, yeah, I always dig learning about what other people listen to, both kind of in the genre that they play and then outside of that. So I really appreciate you sharing those wonderful, wonderful artists. And since we're just about out of time, I want to remind everyone that to visit your website, ambikachant.com. And again, if you're checking this out on the Be Here Now Network, please just scroll down and you can click on it there. But aside from that, I want to give the floor to you. I know we've kind of been all over the place in this conversation, which I think has been great. We've covered a lot of ground. But is there anything we didn't talk about that you would like to take these last few minutes and talk about, share with our audience? I'm guessing your events and whatnot can be found on your website. But, you know, anything at all, the floor is completely yours.
That's a big responsibility.
I know. And if there is nothing, you can totally say, I've got nothing, and that's also okay. But, you know, just in case there's nothing, something we didn't cover that.
You know, well, actually, there was one thing I wanted to say, which was that you know, in terms of Sidi Malik, she, something about her. So there are a lot of great stories about her connection to Ananda Maima when she was young, and also Maharaji referring to her as the mother of the universe, like when she was very young. And she came off as like, I'm just, you know, a lady, a devotee, but she was so much more than that. And there are some really great stories about her sort of divinity. And I think that that's like her embodiment of the Divine Mother, that she really lived that. And she didn't show it readily. You know, she was a little secretive, you know, but that made it even more kind of, delicious. And the only other story I want to tell is that, because you brought it up when you said that Katie said, you know, we're all just like, we're fuck ups and that's why Maharaji had it. And I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And actually Sidi Ma once said, so there's this really great telling of the Ramayana that Tulsidas wrote, called the Ramcharitmanas. And in the beginning, it's an amazing book. It's not an easy read though. I'll come right out and say that, but it's an amazing book. And the beginning is all Shiva's story, is the story of Shiva and Parvati. And there's this telling of like, so Parvati's in the myth, right? The Parvati's reborn.
Yeah.
She was his wife in the previous life, but all this stuff happened and she ended up in the fire, throwing herself in the fire, Sati. And so she's reborn and she's doing all this like practice and tapasya to like become Shiva's bride again. And she does it and she wakes him out of his thousands of years of meditation. And her father is like, you know, at her house, right? Her parents at her house are like welcoming the bridegroom and his wedding party. And Shiva's wedding party, right, is like ghosts and goblins and naked sadhus covered in ash with dreadlocks, smoking, you know, hash and whatnot, like people, you know, beings without limbs and without heads and like gore and like horror. Like they're just horrifying.
Yeah.
And that's Shiva's wedding party. And like the parents are these very upright people. So that first moment is like, I mean, it's Shiva. So he's a god. So you got to be like, okay, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm going to put aside the way you're dressed and your appearance. But Ma actually said that's who we are, like Maharaji's people. We're Shiva's wedding party.
Oh wow, that is absolutely beautiful. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I couldn't ask for a better note to end on than that. So, wow. Well, thank you again so much for your time. This has been an exceptionally fun conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So again, the album, which really is absolutely beautiful. It's called Mother's Calling, available with Montrology Records. I don't know their website off the top of my head. I should. But if you Google,
I think it's just Montrology.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And if you can't find it, you could Google that because they have a number of wonderful artists. Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
And again, Ambika's website, just scroll down. Please check that out. A lot of great stuff there. And until next time, thank you, Ambika, for your time in this conversation. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Chris. It really has been great.